Hello, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Amanda Anderson, and I'm the marketing coordinator here at PCI Clinical Trial Services. Today, I'm joined by our speakers, Andrew Castles, and who is the general manager of our PCI site in Melbourne, Australia, and Rich Nelson, our senior manager of global logistics. And they'll be discussing clinical trials in Asia and why utilizing Australia is a good choice to support your packaging, labeling, and distribution needs. Now, before we get started, I just wanted to cover a few housekeeping items. So first, if you can please ensure that you are muted so that we can make sure that we're hearing our speakers and the great things that they'll be sharing. And second, because this is an informal chat, we welcome and encourage all of your questions. So if you do have any questions, please enter them into the chat function located on your toolbar. If you're not able to access the chat, please send your questions directly to me via text, iMessage, WhatsApp at country code 1-437-778-9445. And with that, Andrew, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks very much, Amanda. Hi, and welcome to everybody this afternoon, or this morning, or it's Friday morning here in Australia. So the key to any successful clinical trial is to have a robust and responsive and efficient supply chain process, which enables consistent global supply. And Australia is actually one of the most mature markets in the Asia Pacific region for clinical trials. And the Australian drug sector alone invests more than $1 billion annually into research and development and outsourcing services. We're also well regarded internationally for having really good infrastructure, world class in fact, and we have a number of advantages which make it a destination of choice in the region. So firstly, the most compelling point for us is that we can get things done well with speed. So we can actually generate a clinical trial, particularly for phase one, which is a first in human study, in really rapid timeline with really rapid turnaround. Our local regulatory body, the TGA, or the Therapeutic Goods Administration, has quite a pragmatic approach when it comes to dealing with clinical trials. It's known that for early phase investigational medicines, that there's not a lot of safety information around the drug. There's limited stability and the like. So trials can proceed without having full GMP, and there's a number of committees which meet really every month to be able to free up and enable clinical trials. We'll cover that in more detail as we go through. But having said that, everything is still manufactured and generated in GMP environment. At PCI, we have a GMP facility in order to be able to do that. I don't want to make it just focused on our capabilities though. Also, we're a really handy location for dealing with Asia. We're obviously in the same time zone as different Asian countries and the like, so we can communicate well. For those of you in the US, we have good overlap in our mornings, particularly on the West Coast. East Coast, the window dwindles a bit, but we can always still communicate. The world's not that big a place anymore. And some people might be concerned about, you know, how hard is it to get materials in and out of our country. It's actually really straightforward, and Rich will be able to cover that in a little bit more detail as we go through too. Actually, I might just hand over to Rich now just to speak a bit more around some of those logistics for shipping. Over to you, Rich.
Thanks, Andrew. Good afternoon, evening, morning, wherever it is you are. I am one of those East Coast US people, so I can attest to Andrew saying it's not that hard to chat. We talk all the time and don't ever really seem to, you know, put each other out too much. So thank you all for your time today. Appreciate it very much, you being with us. As Andrew was saying, there's not a lot of complications with shipping your material from the U.S. into Australia. It's a very simple process. Usually only takes the time for the flight is really only like delay in the process. The customs clearance process is very easy. There's not typically any need for an import permit, so that there's no delay related to that. It's just the fact that it is, you know, kind of far away. But that distance that it is from the US is the one of the benefits of using the location in general. So the proximity that Australia gives you as a sponsor or a CRO to your sites in the Asia Pacific region is a major, major advantage. If you were to use a storage distribution vendor in the United States or in the United Kingdom or Western Europe to manage sites in the Asia Pacific region, which you can do, a lot of sites in the Asia Pacific region, you can ship to them from anywhere. But using a site in the US or using a site in the EU, you're looking at a huge east to west distance, which means you can only have one communication a day. You can send an email from the site in, say, South Korea to your vendor in, say, Illinois or Pennsylvania. And by the time the people there get it, figure out the answer and answer it, it's nighttime in Korea. So the Korean team sent it during their daytime. It was night in the U.S., so you had to wait for the U.S. to get up, answer the email during their day, and now it's night in Korea. So you've got one communication over 24 hours, unless you set something up and plan it. Like Andrew and I said, we meet all the time, but we set those up. So if you have an emergency where you don't have a chance to set it up, you're losing the ability to communicate with your distribution vendor. Say it's a situation with a temperature excursion, where the site's temperature controls facilities are down, so they need new medication. You have no capacity really to do that from a vendor in the US or the EU. Whereas Australia, although it is, you know, distance-wise, Australia is kind of far from some of the countries in the Southeast Asian region. There's only three time zones difference in the east to west. So all the distance is north to south. So that proximity to your project team, to your storage facility, to your distribution facility, gives you a major advantage that you don't have if you use a traditional location in the US or the EU. So that is, you know, the first major benefit. Second is the ease of movement of materials. So everyone knows shipping within the European Union is the easiest thing in the world to do. Once you're in one EU country, you can ship to the other 26 without any problem. It's pretty much the same as shipping from one state to another, except it's actually crossing an international border. There's no customs window. There's nothing to slow you down there. The Asia Pacific countries have established, it's not quite as easy, but and it's not quite as tight of an organization, but they have what's called the ASEAN, A-S-E-A-N, which is their economic union. And they started out with a small group and they've expanded over time. So now they're at what's called ASEAN plus six, which does include Australia. What that means for you is the movement of material from Australia into all the various countries around the region is very easy. Most times there's no need for import licenses. There's no need for import permits. The customs process is very quick because it's coming from another ASEAN country, as opposed to, again, coming from the US or the EU. And there's significant tax benefits on the importation side. So you would pay a different taxation rate if your shipment came from the US than you would if your shipment came from Australia. So that would be number two. Additional, in adding on to the concept of saving some costs, when you run a phase one or two study in Australia, you have the ability to file for a rebate on any taxes paid on the research and development involved in that study, where you can receive back 47% of the money that you spent. So that can be a huge number. So you're saving money in your shipping, you're saving money in your design because you've gotten the material closer to where it needs to be. And then you're saving up to 47% of your research and development costs through that tax rebate. So there's a huge, huge cost benefit implication because that you wouldn't get if you ran the study from somewhere else. I get asked very often, does it cost, how much more or how much less does it cost to ship material directly to sites in, say, Taiwan from the US versus from having a depot in Australia? And just if you were to just line by line match them up, it actually comes out to cost roughly the same amount. But that doesn't take, then when you take into account the money that you save on those taxes, the money that you save on that S&D operations, all those savings that you get for Australia tilts the scale very, very strongly to the side of using Australia instead of staying in the US or the EU. One other question that I often get asked about the logistics is, why not use a different country that's more centrally located, like Japan or even China? And the reason for that is very simply, drug that goes into Japan or China has to stay and be used in Japan or China. Both those countries are deep single supply only strategies, which means you have to have a depot in that country, and that depot can only handle that country. Australia can ship to any of the other countries in the region, including They can ship to any other countries in the region that allow for that, even if they're not participating in the trial. So you can use Australia as a central depot for the region, even if you're not running the study in Australia. A lot of countries, you're not allowed to ship anything in if you don't have the study actually running there, but Australia's not like that. You can use them even when they aren't in the study. You just send a nice little letter with your bulk shipment saying this material is being used in clinical trials in other countries, and we're using a storage and distribution facility in Australia, and they'll let that through customs, and you can use them to still supply the entire region. One thing that I know I do get asked about a lot, and I'm going to go back to Andrew to actually answer this one, is with regards to GMP standards. You know, we have, you know, the US, we have, you know, the GMP standards that we're supposed to follow. Different countries have different versions of that. Because you can be a regional location, Andrew, can you speak a little bit about how your GMPs work in Australia and how they apply to other countries around the region?
Yeah, sure. So any IMP which comes into Australia has to be manufactured to a standard which is fit for the intended purpose for the stage of use in clinical trials. But as I mentioned before, at the phase one point especially, there's a degree of flexibility required to be able to support change as knowledge of the process increases. So the extent of process controls and characterization is intended to ensure that trial subjects are not placed at risk and the results of clinical trials are unaffected by safety, quality, or efficacy arising from unsatisfactory manufacture. So when you compare it with marketed products, an IMP may lack repeat manufacture events to demonstrate consistency between batches which are used in the same or different clinical trials. Don't have full process validation and or very detailed attention to adequate labeling for randomization and blinding. So some of these factors can place a strain on normal GMP processes, as well as the authorized person for release for supply of the IMP. So here at PCI Melbourne, we're actually a specialist in the phase one GMP manufacturing space. We're a CMO with a focus on reducing the risk to patient population while focusing on manufacture processes suitable for the stage of clinical trial. You know, we also deal with really closely with the contract research organisations. Yeah, that's one point that I should have mentioned before as well. I know a bit off GMP now, Rich, but Australia is a big country, but not a lot of people. And so we all actually do know each other. We've got really good contacts. Everybody does know someone quite well as a friend in either in CMO space or CRO space. And that really helps to get things done too. And that extends right through the region. So it's not just time zones, it's also relationships that we have too.
That's great. And I'm sure everybody on the call will agree that relationships can make a huge difference. A lot of times it's not necessarily when you need a problem solved, knowing the right person to call is more important than actually knowing the answer to the question. And then back to the question of, you know, regulations and stuff like that. what does the TGA need in terms of like approvals and stuff like that? Because I know I said that you don't need to be running the study in Australia in order to distribute to the region. But what when you are running the study in Australia, is that approval quick? Is that approval easy? Yeah. You know, we have what's called an IND in the US, which kind of like can get in the way of things sometimes. So does the TGA approval obstruct or limit what you can do?
That's a really good point. So an IND is not required for clinical trials in Australia. And so details pertaining to the clinical evidence, toxicology and CMC, they're all presented in what's known as an investigational research brochure, or IRB, to a committee called the Human Research Ethics Committee, or HREC. We're very good with our acronyms. The HREC chairs both the scientific sub-review and the ethics review prior to any approval. And so these reviews are really frequent. They happen every month. And as I mentioned right from the outset, there's a strong degree of pragmatism through these. Not just anything will get through. There's got to be a really sound basis and judgment for it. But yeah, that the relevant information gets assessed there. Approval is often really quick, and then phase one trials can start straight after that. And so it does actually really help to get things approved if you can leverage the experience of a GMP manufacturer who can give confidence to drug product supply. And so in that case, once again, we're registered as a manufacturer with the TGA, and we can also provide a bit of CMC support to help through the early phase with manufacturing and analytical qualification. And that just helps to build confidence around the drug product itself. And probably a contrast to how it works in the US. Could you just comment a bit around how the IND works in that space, Richard?
Before I get to that, we have a question in the chat that I want to get to. Sure. Thank you, Tony, for chiming in. And the question is, can you please, this one is kind of for you, Andrew. Can you please speak to any labeling services or support you provide in Australia and the rest of APAC? I know, you know, there's a couple different ways that'll work. You guys have some labeling abilities, but there's also some just-in-time packaging capabilities that you guys have that I know we can't do in the US. So I'll let you go on about them.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, we do offer a labeling service here in PCI Melbourne, and labeling that's one thing which is actually quite specific for the TGA. So every single label for clinical trials in Australia does need to have an expiry date on it. And that I believe that's different to other parts of the world. And so that can prove a challenge sometimes in the early phase when there's not a lot of stability data there. So that's where we work with the sponsors, with our authorised person to put a nominal date on there for a expiry date, and then we can extend it out from there. Rich, you mentioned just-in-time labelling as well. And so, yeah, we can do that, particularly if a bulk amount of a drug product comes into our depot. We can then label it for the right trial site, for the right cohort. We can also do escalating doses particularly in the phase one state, where you do want to see what the limits are around patient safety. And so, yeah, I might just jump a little bit into just in time as well while we're at it. We work closely with the CROs to confirm the next cohort dose date. We prepare IMP accordingly, and we get the just-in-time labels all sorted out in unison, get it labeled, then get it shipped more or less just in time for dosing. It can arrive on the day of dosing or on the day before, so that the patients are treated exactly at the right time.
Can you do that for shipments into other countries as well? Like, can you say the shipment's going up to South Korea? Can you do that just-in-time labeling in Australia for shipments to other countries within the region?
It does take a bit more of a run-up with just-in-time labeling to get deeper into Asia. So We've had limited experience with that. It's more the traditional packaging and labeling that we've done into Asia so far.
Hopefully, Tony, if that didn't answer your question, please feel free to follow up with another one into the chat window. Thanks for that, Andrew. So where were we? What were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about the US IND.
Yeah.
So the US IND sounds a little different than the TGA approval. The US IND is required to be filed for, and then there's like a 30-day waiting period after you file for it where you can't move your drug in and out of the country until that 30-day waiting period goes by. So it can get in the way. I often have customers that want to ship me material that their IND isn't in effect yet, and I have to tell them, no, you have to wait. So it seems like that being out of the way in Australia is yet another thing that makes it a little easier to get things done down there. One other thing that, in addition to the IND that you sometimes need, that I know is very similar to Australia, is both countries are equally concerned with contaminants, biological contaminants, particularly to the livestock that is in, especially in Australia, I think more so than it is in the U.S., a huge part of their economy. So anytime you have any biologic substances involved in your material, you have to be able to certify where that material came from. Now, for the most part, that the only thing that anyone's ever concerned with is bovine spongiform encephalopathy, BSE or TSE, which is really only contained in capsules and the capsule shells themselves, because the capsules are made from gelatin, which is made from ground up bones of other cows. So if the cows that they used to make the gelatin were infected, then the capsule shells themselves could also still carry the infection. And you typically, I know in the US, you need a permit from our Department of Agriculture. In Australia, you do need what's called a BICON permit. That BICON permit takes about 2 weeks to get. But once you have it, you can use it for 2 years and you can keep making shipments against it. It's not a one-time use thing. You can keep making additional shipments against that BICON permit for up to 2 years. And that permit just gives you permission to bring in, that material that, because you've certified that it is, safe and that any infectious agents have been properly purified out of the substances. Back to regulations and things like that. I know the UK and the US, I'm sorry, the UK and Australia, are very close, closely tied in close relationship between the two. Want to talk a little bit about the need for a QP release, which is something that I know we need for the UK. You want to touch on whether or not that's something that we need for Australia?
Yeah, we don't need a QP specifically. So we still do follow the PICS system here in Australia, but it's not to the same degree as having a QP. We have what's known as an authorized person, and they still do a release. They're still part of the quality function, and there is still an independent oversight in terms of release, but it's not QP per se. They do have the scientific and technical background and expertise.
Again, something that makes the world of Australia a lot easier. So we have a couple minutes left. I'd love to open it up at this point for any more questions from anyone in the audience. I know there are quite a few people here, so if anyone has any questions, we'd like to leave the last couple minutes for you to fire away at either Andrew or I, if there's anything else we can answer for you that we didn't talk about. This is that awkward moment where I sit here and just nod my head and hope someone types something. thank you, Dennis. other than expiration dates, are there any other requirements from a labeling perspective that are required that are different than US requirements?
No, it still follows Annex 13 principles. So everything that you'd expect in Annex 13 is what's on our labels. The only other unique requirement is just that expiry or retest date.
And we will point out, Dennis, that in addition to that date being required on the label for Australia, it's required on primary and tertiary packaging. So say you've got a vial of material and you've got 10 vials inside a box and you need to update the expiry date, that would entail changing the box, opening the box, and changing all 10 vials. So that date has to be on everything. See, I learned something from all the time we practiced this. Anybody else?
One other statement, which I think we can make, Rich, is that while we're doing a phase one study, the data which can be collected from that can actually help with getting stability data or some other data ready and raring for a phase two study when it kicks off as well. I know most people on the call are probably familiar with that, but if you're new to the clinical trial space and you're thinking about doing your first one, it's something that all the CROs here can help with. PCI, we can help you with that as well. And we always cheer when we see a successful phase one come through and graduate to phase two. That's there's nothing more heartening than that. But the best way to get into phase two is to know that you've got some really good data to be able to take it to carry through. You don't have to start again with stability at that phase.
Thanks for that, Andrew. Any other questions? You're very welcome, Dennis. I hope we answered that to your satisfaction. Are there any other questions from the assemblage? All right, then again, thank you everyone for your time. We're going to go back to Amanda real quick, our host, for some quick just updates on our next offerings.
Thank you, Rich. And thank you, Andrew. That was great. Great discussion. And thank you, everybody, for your questions as well. If you have any further questions that maybe you didn't think of during the chat and you think of afterwards, please don't hesitate to contact me directly at amanda.anderson@pciservices.com. Or you can actually enter those questions into the after chat survey that I'll be sending out after this chat as well. Now, if I may just ask you to turn your attention to our upcoming schedule. We do have one more water cooler chat scheduled for the remainder of this year, which will be on December 10th with our experts, Tim, Brian, and Tris. They'll actually be chatting about what's been happening this year with clinical supplies and how to effectively plan your clinical supplies moving forward into 2021. To register for this chat, please visit our website at www.pciservices.com/water to complete your registration. Now, I know you only see one chat on our upcoming schedule, and typically we have more. Our water cooler chat series has been a very great success, and we are excited by your feedback that you've provided us and your comments, and I wanted to thank you for all your continued support. We will be taking a short break over the holiday period and into January while working on pulling together a new and exciting schedule for 2021. We would definitely love to hear from you on any topics that you would be interested to see on the agenda moving forward. You can send these topics to myself, again, to my email address, amanda.anderson@pciservices.com, or you can actually enter those also on the survey that I'll be sending out afterwards, and we'll do our best to get these on the agenda for the new year. Now, if you've missed any of our past chats and are interested in listening to any of the recordings, we do have all our recordings available on our website. If you go to www.pciservices.com/water-cooler-list, you will definitely see all of our chats on there. Some are video, some are audio, some are also articles that we write after our water cooler chats that might be of interest to you. You can see here on the screen that our last three water cooler chats are up there and available for you to listen to. So with that, I just wanted to thank you very much for joining us today. We hope to see you at our next water cooler chat in December. And we wish you a good rest of your day. Thank you. Bye.